Welcome to the Fig Show.
Welcome everybody to episode number 93 of Biting the Bullet. I'm joined by my co-host Typo.
Hey yo.
It's me, your boy Luke, and we're joined with a very special guest, Angela McCardle, the LP chair for Los Angeles and running for the LP national chair in 2022. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
I'm really excited to talk to you. You've been making the rounds on a lot of the Liberty shows recently, and that's because you're saying some really different things than most people that have been running for chair recently for the Libertarian National Party. And I think that's awesome, and we're really glad to hear it. And you're a part of the Mises Caucus. So one of my first questions that I wanted to ask you was, how did you get involved with the Mises Caucus and what made you go to the Mises Caucus?
I have been involved with the Mises Caucus from the very beginning. I'm not a founding member, but I would say I was a very early adopter. I've run for office twice in the Libertarian Party. The first time I ran was in 2017. And it took a lot of work to get me to run. I was very reluctant, like a lot of other people who come from more of an anarcho-capitalist background. And finally, I was convinced, okay, run for Congress. It's a special election. You're going to have really great opportunities to do outreach through the media. You know, this is a great platform. So I thought, okay, I'll do it. And I was really shocked by the lack of support that I had through party infrastructure. That's not to say that people weren't really supportive by giving me financial donations, that they were. People were supportive of me in general, especially because it was a special election, not during the regular season. So not a lot of other people were running. But as far as like what the actual party could do for me, it was almost nothing. And the Mises Caucus is reforming it to make the party meaningful. I don't mean like a stuffy suit and tie, you got to fill out this 20-page application to get XYZ done. We're going to make it so formal that we, choke all the air out of the room. I just mean simply like there's something,
Yeah.
We can donate to candidates. Great. We do that. That's something that should have been happening. We provide candidate training. We're working on doing that in California, at least. Better messaging. Kind of a more cohesive brand for the Liberty movement. These are all things that I would have benefited hugely from if the Mises Caucus had been something I could attach myself to when I was running for office. So I was just all about that. And as far as, personal stuff, I really, really, really like the economic focus, especially as someone who lives in California. I mean, economic literacy is so important. I love to screech and complain about how economically illiterate everyone is. And they're doing I can't believe these people want to tax themselves. They want to tax themselves. But it's because the public education is just so abysmal. We don't know anything about economics when we go to public school in California. We don't know anything about it when we go to college. We don't even know about history. So I can't expect the average voter to know any of this stuff. And so then they're not going to make an informed decision. So I think that economic literacy is something that libertarians should really stress if we want to get out of this like insane tax scheme that we're all stuck in. So anyway, those are a couple of things that really drew me into the Mises Caucus. And obviously, like the fire and passion that we bring. Michael Heiss is like, the work that he's done has been really incredible to grow an organization like this from just nothing in about 3.5 years, just nothing. And we've only been a registered PAC for maybe a year and a half, and we're bringing in over $12,000 a month. That's incredible. I mean, sure, Republicans and Democrats bring in that kind of money all the time, but the Libertarian Party, it's, we're making like
we've been around since the late 70s, early 80s, and there's one caucus finally being able to do something like that. It's kind of insane to think that it took somebody this long to figure out the game.
Yeah. 1971, I believe, was when the party got established in Colorado and then California got established, I think the very next year. It's just, you know, come on. And we've had some ups and downs. So it's not just like it's been all down, but I would say things have been on the decline since at least the mid 2000s. And I'd like to move things back up. So I'm very optimistic and I am very appreciative of all the hard work that the people in the Mises Caucus have put in.
Yeah, I saw that you were doing a lot of the like videos of like business owners in California. And that was something that I knew it was happening, but I never like actually saw like the corporate press talking about it that much or any other major news outlet, I guess. But then when I saw you guys do it, I thought that was really powerful. I mean, you're showing like real people that were affected by this. And that's the type of messaging that I'd like to see coming from the Mises Caucus and hopefully the Libertarian Party.
Yeah, like, you know, it's funny because there's all this controversy around the Mises Caucus being too abrasive or, oh, we don't like mm-hmm. your memes. Your memes are offensive. Your messaging, it just terrifies us. But the reality of it is we're doing what the party should be doing. Like, the California Mises Caucus went out and found businesses that had been hurt by the lockdowns. And some of that, you know, we get in the reopened groups and social media and find people that way. It's really easy to make alliances. And we would just go and talk to people without even a hard political sell, just like, what happened? Tell me your story. And we just get these heartbreaking stories from people. You know, Sharon, who owned she still owns the Pepper Tree Cafe in Glendora, California, decided that she absolutely had to defy the lockdowns and keep her little restaurant open in order to just pay her bills because her house had burned down while the whole thing was going down. It's just like, you know, so we just go out and the first thing we do before we even interview these people is we're like, I'm really sorry you're going through this. We want to help you tell your story. And they're all of a sudden, they're immediately intrigued in the party because we're the only people they say who've even expressed that we care. Ah, like that was just so heartbreaking. Like no one else even cared to ask you, like, how are you doing?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you look at the mainstream media in the same time frame that you guys have been doing this, they're saying that anybody that wants to get rid of these lockdowns are horrendous people. And it's like, here's a large majority of Americans that have lost everything. And you want to tell them that they're horrendous, horrible people because they want to survive and do what they love doing. Like what? And so it's very easy. Like that's something that bothered me about the Jorgensen-Cohen's campaign. That they didn't hit lockdowns. Spike, actually, he hit lockdowns pretty hard for the majority of it. And I love Spike Cohen. He's awesome. And Jill Jorgensen, she touched on it a couple times and she always pushed it back off to the states that federally she shouldn't be able to do anything. And while I get why she would say that principle-wise, that it would make sense that she says something like that, I just don't think it was the right messaging at the time frame. But especially because there's all these people that have been directly affected, like that's the time that the federal government should step in and be like, hey, you guys can't do this. Like that's like the perfect opportunity for any type of, if we're having a president, we're talking in the system that we have now, that's what they're there for. Hey, this is a violation of these people's rights. You're not allowed to tell them that they can't work in their own business.
Yeah, it was tone deaf messaging. You don't run for president as a libertarian, people complain to you about the loss of their freedom and then give them the, well, actually, because that's really what it was. It was, well, actually, you know, and like you don your fedora and you know, tell them how, like, don't do that. Don't, no, please. You can say that you don't have the power as president to do something, but you can also, you know, scold them, call them out. Talk about how the governors are abusing their authority, that they don't have legislative authority to decide these things, and encourage people to file lawsuits that go to the Supreme Court, and talk about how you would put in libertarian Supreme Court picks. And there's so many ways that you could go with this instead of just, yeah, you can't do anything. Good luck.
Yeah.
Try not to starve.
And it's just like it was a whole group of people that the only person that was really talking about opening up. And he wasn't even open, like really hard stance on opening up was Trump. And it was like, you think all these people that are already either registered Republican, because those are majority of the people that wanted to open up or Republicans, And then, you know, off and on, a lot of the centrist, like left, center left and center right wanted to open up. They kind of like the left's kind of started seeing the bad aspects of it, I guess. And those were it was the perfect opportunity for libertarians to be like, hey, this is part of us. This is should never happen. And that's all they had to say. Even if they did some like a lower campaign or just at a state's level, I wish more Libertarian Party states did what you did, or Libertarian parties in the states did what you guys did and went to those businesses and got those people's stories out. The only other Pearson I really saw going hardcore with something like this was David Portnoy of Barstool Sports, where he was getting a whole bunch of fundraising for businesses like this. And he's not even like a hardline Republican or lefty. He's kind of center of the road, leans one way or the other on different issues, but he definitely doesn't see himself as a libertarian or anything else. But he understood this.
Yeah, this is just a really basic thing. When we think about freedom, the first thing you think about is whether or not you're imprisoned, you know, the fundamental right to just move around freely if you're someone who hasn't egregiously harmed someone else. And we've all basically been put on house arrest for the better part of a year. You know, people in Oklahoma didn't have a lockdown, so that's nice. I don't think Mississippi did. Obviously, Kristi Noem's state didn't, but most of us were under some degree of lockdown. And I don't understand how you can message, how you can position yourself as a libertarian party if you can't champion the basic concept of freedom of movement of innocent people. That really troubles me. I think the Libertarian Party put out an email, the first official email communication about it, 1 year after the lockdown started. So they are officially 1 year behind in their messaging. Should have been the very first day. This is not something that takes a long ass committee meeting. This is, you take a couple of phone calls, it's something urgent, whatever, get people on the phone and say, I need you to make an email motion. Like, if you're tied up in bylaws, that's fine. But if you care, you'll make it happen, and you can make it happen within a few hours. And you just get that stuff off to the presses. For crying out loud, you know, Reason Magazine did a better job championing this than the Libertarian Party did. I know there are a lot of people in the LP that want to poke fun at Reason for being like the beltway libertarian communication. Sorry, like they did a better job than LP National did. So we got a ways to go, but I'm confident, yeah. Right? I'm confident.
How does that happen? Like, why, what, is it something that they, is it that they're just trying to appease authority? Is it like just, you know, not catching sight of the moment? Like, how does it just go by so hard? Like, I think that's what everyone, like, I'm like, for me, and I think a lot of people, is like, we had no faith in the Libertarian Party before this all even happened. And then the campaign and the lockdowns and all this happened. And I think that caused a lot more people to lose even more faith in the Libertarian Party. But like, how is something that simple just, how do they miss that? Like, I don't understand how that happens. Do you have any idea how that happens?
Sorry, you froze there for a second.
Oh, sorry. I was just asking, like, how does something like the messaging that we were just talking about, how does that like just miss in 2020 for the LP?
The Libertarian Party has, at least for the past 4 years, been very caught up with chasing the culture and looking for acceptance instead of paving the way, and being like rebels. There's no rebelliousness left in the culture. And it's like the Libertarian Party has a self-esteem issue and we're embarrassed to be libertarians. So instead of leading with libertarianism or the pursuit of freedom, we constantly beg everyone to look at us and say, see, we're just like you, we're just like you. We want the same things. We're just trying to achieve it in a different way. And that is, I can't think of a time in history where using that sort of messaging strategy has ever accomplished a goal. We're just like you, tyrannical state we hate. We just want to achieve it a different way. That's not good messaging. I have always thought that the fiscally conservative, socially liberal was a pretty bad take on it. but it's still not as bad as we're just like you. We just want to achieve things a different way. That's got to be the worst take, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the Gary Johnson one worked for me, I'll have to say. Even I recognize it's pretty bad now.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that idea is basically what the Republicans have been doing for a while now. You know, they lose everything. The only reason why they won the presidency with Trump was because he was so counterculture to everything else that was going on. So it's like, well, we already see this strategy that they're employing right now, the LP National employing right now, losing on a national scale, where somebody at the table that already has a seat is basically just getting whomped on. And we're going to employ the same strategy and talk about how we're different. We're a third option. And like the third option messaging, I think is absolutely horrible. Like, I think we're not a third option. We should be thrusting ourselves into being the only option if you want to, you know, have any sort of liberty or freedom in this country at the very minimum.
Absolutely. It's not good to type yourself as a distant third place when you're trying to win any kind of contest. And there's a lot of different contests, right? Like, sure, there's the electoral contest. I get that. We are technically the distant third place, but there's a battle for people's hearts and minds. And there's like the issue by issue. You don't want people to constantly think of you as third place when you're trying to convince them about something, even if it's just a single issue. Not good. What it really shows, though, there is no messaging strategy.
Yes.
No one has sat down and said, what do we want to communicate over the next year? Let's go out and find, let's do some demographic studies. Who's our target audience? Is it males 18 to 45 who are white? I don't think that that's the case, but you know, sometimes we act like it is and then we're reacting to that. So we haven't done any research on that. So we don't know who we're messaging to. We don't know what our message is. We don't know what we want to accomplish. So that's just a big disaster right there. I'd like to turn that around.
Yeah, that's part of your stance as becoming the chair, is though the messaging especially is one of the things that you talk about in every interview that you've done. And I think that's honestly, it's half the battle, in my opinion, because it's like you have said many times before, people want to know what the LP is. The first thing they're going to do is type it into Google, and all of the social media that is recorded with LP National, LP, Instagram, Twitter, whatever it is. And the first things they see is you have to be actively anti-racist. It's going to turn a lot of people off. Or these lockdown or nothing on lockdowns for a year, it's going to turn a lot of people off. And, you know, it sounds like we're catering to a base, but when that, you know, a broken clock is right twice a day. And right. when it is, like, yeah, the Republicans got something right. They didn't want a lockdown. They didn't want mask mandates. And that was honestly true and correct in the sense that that should have never been mandated in the first place.
Yeah. And it is successful. It's like, we're afraid that people are going to dislike us, but the rainwater campaign in Indiana led with lockdowns and he did really well. It resonates with people. It also resonates with people who are afraid to speak out. I lost a lot of friends in 2020 who weren't libertarian. And it was, I don't mean just like casual friends or Facebook friends. I mean, people I've been friends with for 10, 12 years. I'm in their wedding photos. And they I was just hardcore like canceled. And that sucks. But I gained a lot more friends. People who just said, you know, like, I appreciate so much you speaking out on this. I'm afraid to speak out. You're becoming a voice for everyone. And we really appreciate that. So it's like, if you just have integrity, you know, you're treating yourself with respect, but you're also providing a message of hope to so many people. And just for the stuff that, for the people who don't like you for who you are, who can't appreciate your authenticity or your conviction to liberty, just let that stuff burn off. Like, it's a little bit painful, but it's just like gold in the refiner's fire. You know, let the scum rise to the top and scrape it off. You'll be better and stronger for it.
Yeah, I'd rather be the people's champion than win the presidency based off of bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's always, and even in historical aspects, like, you go back and look, like, the people that were respected and are known are either tyrants or the people's champions. And I'd rather be known as a people's champion than a tyrant.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny with the QAnon thing. Hold on, because I'm going to bring this around. One of my critiques was, you know, there's no one coming from the White House to save you. There's no revolution of the people starting at the White House. It has to start with you. So everybody who's like holding onto this hope that some shadowy figure is going to come out of the White House and turn everything around and, you know, save America, like that's ridiculous. But sometimes we kind of do that in the Libertarian Party because we put so much like faith and weight in our presidential candidate, and then we neglect what's going on right around us. And I think that we've seen, especially if you live in a blue state like I do, that what's most important is to have a local government that's liberty-minded. Los Angeles County is very different than Orange County and Riverside County because the county board of supervisors and most of the mayors in Orange County and Riverside, they're not all about these lockdowns. So even though we have a governor who's issuing these tyrannical edicts, we have local enforcement that's saying, nah, you know, we're not going to do that. Maybe we'll go along with the 50% capacity thing or whatever, but we're not referring these crimes, quote unquote, to criminal prosecution. The DA is not doing them, and we're not going to collect the citations, even if we have to have people write them. So it makes a big difference if you'll focus on cleaning up the space right around you, you know, and trying to make your city or your local government a freer place. It's gonna do wonders for your life and your right. political movement.
Yes, that's one thing that I can't remember. I think I was listening to you on Tom Woods, and one of the things that popped into my head when I was listening to it was we put a lot of stock, especially I think Typo and I do the same thing. Where, you know, we were in the military or in the Marine Corps. It's very based on leadership, and you're looking for great leadership. But the one thing that the military or the Marine Corps specifically that I always say does very well is it thrusts people into small unit leadership. So like you're saying, those state party, those state elections, city council seats and things like that are very important because in the same sense towards the Marine Corps, as a corporal, you can lead an entire platoon and it's not like looked at as very crazy. Like it's not something that's normal, but it can be done. And some of the people that have won Medal of Honors and things like that did it in small units, four people, five people, especially the World War II citations and so on and so forth. But what we do look for is leadership. And I think that's why a lot of people put a lot of stock in LP National, which I understand. And there should be good leadership, but good leadership can create good foundations, but great foundations create really great leaders and bring forth the really great leaders to the top because the foundation is so strong. And that's something that I think is very important that we really need to focus on. And one of the reasons why Typo and I have decided to get involved with the Mises Caucus here in Arizona, specifically Maricopa County. But there's, well, and honestly, there's no libertarian ideology out here, except most of the people that I talk to can't stand Republicans and Democrats, regardless if they're registered Republican or Democrat. So it's like it's one of the perfect areas where you can get away with, you know, the socially liberal, fiscally conservative, like talking points. But they didn't even try that here. They were just like, Arizona's red and it's going to be red forever. And obviously this year it wasn't fucking red. So I think it's just interesting how those foundations, and especially the Libertarian Party being as against the grain as it started as, or as from what I've read as it started as, it just didn't create that foundation ever. It was just like the LP is the LP and that's where we funnel everything into. We're not focusing on that. And that's what I really liked after I talked to Michael Heiss. He was like, no, we're building foundations. And that's why the Mises Caucus, the way that they've got everything set up right now is very intriguing to me. And I want to get him on to talk about the specifics of that at one point, because I think a lot of people, they hear us talk about it. And we were very against joining the Libertarian Party for a while since we started this show. But after talking to him, I was like, this is what I'm looking for. This is the kind of foundational
ideas of liberty. You see his messaging work?
yeah, his messaging actually worked because he has a foundation on his ideas and he actually created something and built it that mirrored that. And I think that's super important.
I think a foundation is really essential. And understanding your purpose is really essential because no one can, we all argue over what the Libertarian Party is supposed to do. And it's kind of a stupid argument. We're not actually arguing over what the Libertarian Party is supposed to do. We're arguing about how we think it's supposed to achieve it. Because whatever you say, the Libertarian Party is supposed to do messaging. It's supposed to win elections. It's supposed to grow a grassroots movement. It's supposed to make the world a freer place to live. That's what we want it to do. So we already are in agreement and we didn't know it, but that's because we weren't really thinking properly about what the purpose of the LP is. And then you got to lay a foundation, right? And that's a whole nother can of worms. What county are you guys in again?
Maricopa County.
Okay. So, you know, it's interesting when you start to build an affiliate, and this is what I encountered in Los Angeles. I inherited a local county party that was a complete mess, a disaster. It was run by some older people who meant well, but were a little bit out of touch technologically and culturally. And it was infected with a pathological group of people who hated the party. And they thought that the whole purpose of the Libertarian Party was to exist in name only for candidates to use if they wanted to. And they actively opposed any progress we would make. So I discovered that as I started to try to lay a foundation and clean things up, the people who disapproved of that tried very hard to drag me back down. You have to build a solid foundation and understand who your key players are going to be in order to do that, because you're going to encounter a lot of opposition as people don't, as they see the progress you make, experience cognitive dissonance and do everything in their power to try to fight you on it. I think that's what the Mises Caucus has encountered to a certain degree with all the ridiculous name calling and sneering at us for fundraising and, you know, all kinds of ridiculous insults. But the reality is the party is in a much better shape now with all of us joined and paying dues and doing really good outreach and messaging, just like the Annie lockdown videos. So I'm optimistic.
Yeah. I think, and then it's weird too, like how upset people are with, like, I don't know, they find anything. They'll say like the language is too aggressive. And it's like we're trying to take on the CIA. I think we could be a little aggressive. I mean, yeah. I think Dave Smith like just said this, but I think it was along the lines of like, why do we have to like cater and be nice to these people? When at like the higher echelons of our government, when like they literally go on national television and call us terrorists or domestic terrorists.
We should not have to tiptoe around the feelings of the people who ran Guantanamo Bay. Like there's Guantanamo Bay and then there's like a whole nother level, like what it is, which is messed up. And then like all of the footage that was leaked of torturing people, like on top of the torture that they received, the extra torture, like the humiliation torture. But we're afraid that if we use a bad word, we might hurt someone's feelings or they won't like us. Like these people are, the term is blood-soaked monsters. I'm not so concerned about hurting their feelings. And no one else should absolutely. Be either, right?
No, we like, shouldn't.
Have some self-esteem and some self-respect. Like that's not the element that we're trying to attract. If some bloodthirsty neocon in the CIA has a come to Jesus moment and they want to flip and go libertarian, I think that's great. And I'm going to be forgiving and welcome them, but I'm not going to worry that me using a bad word is what kept them at bay. There's a much deeper psychological trauma and loyalties and fear of retaliation that's probably keeping them from liberty. It's not going to be our language.
Yeah, I'll tell absolutely. You now that the type of messaging and language that's acceptable in the LP now is not going to get any veterans in this country over, like none.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll attract any of them.
And that was one of our things too, you know, where as veterans and, you know, we came from a position of, you know, being against the wars And I feel like that messaging has completely dropped off. Obviously, in some respects for good reason, in other respects, I still think it should be one of the highest things that we're talking about because it literally destroys what they do. Like you get rid of war, you get rid of a shit ton of problems in the United States. With veterans, we're obviously very in your face and upfront and honest about a lot of things, and we don't talk the nicest. So I think a lot of them, even though that they were in this mindset of, you know, liberty and freedom, a lot of them, you know, believe in the Constitution and things like that. It's kind of hard to be like, I'm going to go join that party. When half of them, when we first got in, were calling us, you know, a baby killer. And it's like, yeah, whatever. I get that. Like, you know, a lot of it, let that roll off because it's like, we did some fucked up shit. That's why I'm not with it anymore. And then the other half are like, you don't talk nice enough. So we're like, well, I'm not going to change the way I talk for you. So I like the way that it's going, not so much just because I can cuss and, you know, think that those things are okay or whatever. It's more so a strong, it goes back to the strong foundation and some confidence. I think you've talked about it a couple of times already, where it's like we at the LP, whether it's at a state representative level or the national level, there's like no comp, like it seemed like there was no confidence. And the only place that I found any kind of confidence or silver lining is in the Mises Caucus, which is why we joined. And I think that's a good thing. And I'm looking forward to seeing how it moves forward and progresses. And I hope to be there as it moves forward and progresses. And hopefully we can, you know, gain the traction that we need, especially on the state level, because that's what I'm really worried about. The federal is going to do the federal crap. And I want to put the right people up there that can, you know, at least throw the bombs. But at the state level, we can do a lot more. Nullification is big. Secession is big. I think you've talked about that as it should be a plank or at least something that gets brought back into the conversation in the LP. Mm-hmm. And what are your thoughts on secession? Do you think that's a viable option for a lot of people or for states?
I think it is. And I'm really curious to see what happens with the Idaho, Washington, Oregon thing. So there are a handful of counties in the Pacific Northwest that say, we're out. We wanted to join Idaho. And one of the practical problems with secession as we know it, as we think of it, is that, okay, well, it's really the coastal elites in California that control the state. And so we've already tried to split our state into multiple pieces so many times and it always gets ruled unconstitutional. We're just doomed, right? Like, I don't want all of California to secede because half of the state is at war with the other half. Well, what if Orange County seceded they didn't secede from the nation. They just joined another state. That would be fascinating. So like Orange County is smack dab in the middle, right? Well, I mean, we're sort of on the coast, but we don't touch any other state. But what if they were like, well, you know, we're redder than the rest of the state, but not totally red. So maybe we'll join Nevada. That would be really interesting to see people sort of shake out, you know, like the most quote unquote far right, you know, or liberty minded states and their counties, you know, might glom together, and then more moderate counties might join a more moderate state. And then the far left can go as screeching far left off the cliff as it wants to. And the rest of us wouldn't have to worry about it so much.
Yeah. So I always thought if there was secession, it would be under Donald Trump and would be blue. The only successful secessions I could see were under Donald Trump and it'd be blue states seceding from the union. That's the only successful ones that I could see because they control the narrative. The left controls everything at this point in time. They control the cathedral. They are the leading in opinion, whether it's cultural, economic, or anything else. Mm-hmm. And so I could see that being a thing. I like what Oklahoma did recently, where they passed some bill that goes into their constitution that they can rule constitutional or United States laws as unconstitutional. I saw a couple other states doing the same thing. I think Mississippi might have, and Alabama might have, and a couple other states are thinking about doing the same. I think there's actually one in Arizona that I just saw last night. I can't remember what bill number it is, but I think that's an interesting aspect too. The left does not like that because they think that it could be used, you know, whoever, and they can just nullify constitutional rights, which is, yeah, it's either hate speech or whatever else, which limits their freedom of speech somehow when hate speech does. I don't know. But I think those are interesting, but I never thought about county level secession, and that's pretty, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. And it might like actually happen without the Supreme Court smacking it down. I mean, I'm totally in favor of a state being able to secede from the union. I just know from living in California that we've already received, you know, some pretty stupid rulings on that because we can't even break ourselves up. Just like, oh, come on, you know, like we. So I want to see secession happen in whatever way that we can, you know, if it's peaceful. And if we see counties kind of shuffle back and forth from one state to another, that may open the door for larger, broader secession movements, which would be really exciting. But I think it kind of goes hand in hand with nullification. And I think the more normalized we see nullification becoming, the more likely we'll see secession happen. We've been around a long time, the country too. And now the debt, the length of time our country has existed, coupled with the massive amount of debt that we have, makes it a very destabilizing situation. So that could be something bad. Historically, those things turn out pretty poorly, or it could end up being something great where we split apart peacefully because we can't really, we don't have any other options. So I'm trying to remain optimistic throughout this.
Yeah, I think bringing those ideas to like a broader message it would be really good because it's kind of like a hidden gem that there's like I'm from Illinois. So there was multiple like Southern Illinois. So they hate the northern part of Illinois, specifically Chicago area. But and there is always this they try to, you know, secede from Illinois, or I've never heard the idea of them like hopping over to Missouri. But the succeeding from like, so like if secession gets some sort of like hype and maybe a lot of people start looking into it more, I mean, I think they'll bring the tensions to those states, because I'm assuming there's probably more blue states out there, but there's parts of those states that are like, we want the hell out of here. Because I thought it was only like Illinois that was like that. And then as I had a little bit more experience under my belt, I hear California has that. New York has had that before. Mm-hmm. Seattle, like there's a lot of places that are pushing for like some sort of secession from their state. And I think I never really thought about them moving over to another state. So I think that's even more possible of happening than a bigger secession from the union, at least in a shorter timeline.
Yeah, that would be great. Upstate New York is very, very red. It's pretty rural. And I visited my boyfriend's family up there over Christmas, and I was shocked. I saw a bunch of Donald Trump signs. And you know, coming from LA, yeah. I'm like, people admit that? I thought like the silent majority was literally silent. Oh, I've never seen this. So fascinating. Mm-hmm. And then I learned that they also have a real fear of people moving from New York City up into their area. The people in that area do not want people from New York City moving up and ruining their local politics. Yeah. So that sort of added a new element. I was like, oh, there really is a lot at stake here. Like even just like within the state, people really do want to like kind of control themselves in their own lives as much as they can.
Yeah. That's the interesting thing too. Jared, he was our third host when we first started this show. He moved to Kentucky, but he's from upstate New York. Like I think he was pretty close to Syracuse. He's from a small town up there too. And he was like, yeah, it's all red up there. Like there's no blue up there. And it's always interesting to see the difference between rural and metropolitan like areas, you know, and how big the difference is between the two. And I don't know, like not saying one's not, I've always lived in the city. My father, he lives in Hodunk Nowhere, Nebraska. So I would go out there when I was younger, and not to say that one's better or one's worse, but I think one values freedoms, like the generally accepted idea of freedom that we have, a lot more than the other. And I always thought that was interesting and in how that played out in states. Like, it just seems crazy to me that one population, just because it's bigger, gets to decide everything for the entire community that is a state, even though there's absolutely a large majority that control most of the land, to be honest, that don't agree whatsoever.
Democracy.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Yeah. Democracy. It's not a good system. I don't understand why everyone is so enamored of it. When people on the left, they're the ones that scream democracy the loudest, but when they lose, they scream even louder. Mm-hmm. So I don't understand how they have so much cognitive dissonance over it. You'd think after the not my president thing that they would be a little more sympathetic to people just wanting to live their lives however they want.
Yeah. Yeah. So have you been in California most of your life?
I have been living in California all of my adult life. I moved to California from Texas when I was a teenager with my family. So I've got, I think, a decent idea of what it's like to live in other parts of the country. I did grow up in Texas as a child.
Okay.
And was your family right-leaning, left-leaning?
Oh, very conservative. Yeah. I grew up in a traditional conservative Christian home. My father was a minister. Just like very, you know, like suburban East Texas, not big city Dallas, not middle of nowhere, you know, just very suburban.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. We always like to ask that because there's so many different people in the Liberty movement, especially now that I've gotten more involved with the Mises Caucus, so many different people in the Mises Caucus. Like I was, you know, came from a family of two moms, basically. My mom decided or not decided. She was told me when I was like 5 years old, she was lesbian. And then she ended up meeting my stepmom when I was 10. And I grew up very left leaning. And then decided to join the military. And they were like, what the fuck? Because that's when they were still, you know, anti-war, the left was at that point in time.
Yeah.
And then I kind of moved over to the right. And Typo's very opposite of that. But we found this middle area somehow where we came to where it's like, there should be no government. And we should have there should be a free market with no government. That's all I want. Leave me alone. I'll leave you alone and we can have a good time.
Make that a political chart where the middle is nothing. I like that idea a lot better.
Yeah, that's good. when did you decide that you wanted to run for the national LP chairman?
Oh, let's see. I think I made the decision. I had been thinking about it since 2018, honestly, when this whole like controversy came up with people not liking the direction that the party was in. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm going to push that out for at least 4 years because I need to have more experience and I have this going on and that going on and I have health issues and da 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 da. So I've been thinking about it for a while. But after LP National fumbled the ball in the lockdowns really hard and, people were really talking about it and wondering what the heck was going on. I was thinking, okay, somebody needs to do something about this. And after I got stem cell therapy to help with my Crohn's disease in October, which is a whole nother story, and I started to get better, I thought, all right, I think you're going to be in shape to do this and it's got to be done, right? Someone's got to do it and maybe it's got to be you. So I decided I can't wait to announce because there are so many people who are disappointed in LP National and saying that they're going to tear up their cards or not join or the party's a joke. I feel like I got to kind of save it, you know, maybe I can physically withstand it and I can emotionally and mentally withstand all of the abuse I'm going to get from all of these ungrateful, pathological people that seem to hate anyone who tries to benefit their, you know, find meaning and improve their lives and their organization. So if I can stand it, I guess I'm just going to do it. So that's why I announced, and it's why I announced so early. I think it was really important to give people something to sort of like look to and to try to work towards.
Yeah, I really like that you announced early. Yes. I kind of prefer that. Yes. It kind of gets the ball rolling for like the election coming up. But that gives you like 2 years for people to like, oh, who's this Angela? Like, let me look into her. Oh, she was on Body and Bold. Let me listen to this podcast. Like, I think it gets I don't know. I never understood why waiting so long. So I love that you were like, 2020, let's do like, or yeah. When did you announce 2020?
The end of 2020, like right after the election, I did an interview with Reason where I announced it. Reason magazine, I got to say again, has been better than expected. And they have been pretty kind to me and the Mises Caucus, actually. Mm. Isn't that so funny? Like,
it is weird when they grab onto things like that.
It's historically, there's been all this like animosity between the different libertarian think tanks. And maybe with the exception of Cato, I think a lot of that animosity has kind of melted away as we have seen quite in our faces how bad the enemy is. Mm-hmm. We don't have time. There's no time to be fighting amongst each other and like sniping at people on social media. Like, I just don't have enough hours in the day to spend 45 minutes arguing with someone who hates me. It's about 2 minutes of my day as I scroll through and I just see maybe some negative comments. I'm like, oh, okay, all right. And I think the same goes probably with the Mises Institute and Reason is people have woken up and they're like, wow, I really don't have time to be like mad at the other podcaster or author that I disagree with, you know, 15% of their libertarian ideology. Like, we got to fight the state who they're driving people to bankruptcy and poverty and suicide. It's a pretty serious problem.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the other things I wanted to ask you, because I see you and what's her name? Karen Parlos. Like, you guys are like some of the, at least for what I know of the women in the Libertarian Party, you guys are the most outspoken, like fiery, in your face type people. And I love it. Where did you get that from? Where did you find that to just decide that you're going to be this person that's going to take this on?
I'm just really loud and outspoken and abrasive, I guess. And I've dialed it down, actually. So let me try to think. I don't know. I guess I'm just that way. I wonder how Karen Ann would answer that. She's very much that way. She doesn't have any fucks to give. You cannot divide by the number of fucks, like zero. It's zero. And I feel the same way. I think maybe she's a little more sensitive than I am. And I don't mean that as an insult. I mean, she's a more sensitive person, which is probably also a good thing.
Yeah.
But if you're going to roll in libertarian circles, you can't be a sensitive, like, I don't mean like.
It's like what you said earlier. We're fighting the fucking state.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't be so needing to be cajoled and coddled with your feelings that you can't be effective or speak your mind. There's really no room for it. You need to be authentic and you need to be pretty fierce, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, and you know, you work as a lawyer too, correct?
I'm a paralegal.
Paralegal.
So close, but not quite.
Yeah, paralegal. And I mean, that's another, I think that has a lot to do with the way that you speak and things like that. And I mean, you don't sound like a lawyer, which I love because I hate like those platitudes that they go on. And you're very upfront, in your face, and honest. And I think we need a lot more of that in the Libertarian Party.
Yeah. Karen Ann Harless and I are both paralegals that work in litigation. So that's actually probably got something to do with it. I enjoy litigation because it's the only other thing I can think of besides sports, actually, and maybe politics, where you have an opponent and it's your job to pound them into the ground. So every day I wake up and I'm like, oh, I can't wait. I'm so pumped. You know, I'm just going to own this guy. You should hear me like typing away. I'm just like, oh, get ruined. Like that's how I approach my work. I sound like a 12-year-old boy playing Warzone, but, but at least I enjoy it. Yeah. So I try to do everything with that level of enthusiasm. I used to drink a lot of coffee. So we'll see if I can maintain now that I've cut back on my caffeine intake.
I don't think I could get rid of my coffee. That'd be bad for me.
It was hard. So now I just pound ginseng tea all day instead. It's a slightly different buzz, but I'm still wired.
Love it. One of the last things that we wanted to ask you was, being in California, what do you think about the whole petition to get Gavin Newsom out.
Recall.
The recall. Well, she rubs her hands together. Let's go.
I have participated in myself. I have had a recall event where we had a signature drive and had live entertainment. Adam Kokesh came out and spoke. Thank you, Adam Kokesh. Wow. We had punk bands play. It was fun. What's really great about the recall is Gavin Newsom is universally reviled. No one likes him. He's got a handful of crazy people haven't signed the petition, so they like him. But even the really far left progressives don't like him because they think he hasn't done enough.
Yeah.
They think he hasn't locked us down enough. It's so insane. But we're close to, let's see, I think the last day to turn in signatures is the 17th. So we've got a little less than a week. We're close to 2 million signatures. I'm very hopeful that we're going to have enough. You need 1.5 million, but the county clerks who work at the registrar recorder's office are very particular about recall petition signatures. So if the signature doesn't look just like it did when you signed up for voter registration and it's not legible and it's not perfectly within the box, they'll throw them out.
Wow.
It's very challenging, but if we meet that hurdle, you know, I'm really excited. And I think
what's that look like when he gets recalled?
Well, so I was a voter when Gray Davis got recalled in the late 90s. And it looks like a circus. It becomes an absolute shit show. We had, I think, over 100 people were on the ballot or qualified. Maybe that's ballot and write-in. A ton of people. And we got Arnold Schwarzenegger out of it.
Holy shit.
So that's what you had to look forward to. I don't think that we're going to get a great liberty-minded guy in, because that's sadly, California voters are not, they don't quite understand what we need. They know something's wrong, but they're not oriented towards what will actually fix it. We're probably going to get in another progressive who is less aggressive on lockdowns and worse economically with something like, I don't know, California level UBI or California single payer. Because those are things that some of the progressives in California constantly try to push through our state legislature. So that's my prediction. You know, if we get someone liberty-minded, that'll be fantastic, but I'll have my expectations very low.
Yeah. Are you guys looking at somebody just in case that happens?
Oh, yeah. There have been 3 or 4 people who have said that they want to run, and they're all like, don't announce me yet. I have to find out to see if I have enough funding to run a serious campaign or this or that. So we have some liberty-minded people who want to run, people in the party and some people who hold local offices. So fingers crossed that we get someone good, but also fingers crossed that they don't burn themselves out on this and lose their local offices.
Yeah.
Because it's so important, right? It's so important to hold on to that position that you've got when you're really defending us from our tyrannical, crappy governor.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you like, that's something too. If like somehow in Maricopa, we get some liberty-minded candidate and he sets a fire around here and to the flame and, but I would never want to give him up to the Libertarian Party or the National Party. Like if he's great for me here, why would I want to give him up to the, or even have him spend most of his time running for a higher candidacy or, and then lose both. So that would not work out very well. That's interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah. You got to be
strategic.
Yeah. Someone like that, when you get elected to local office, I think you need to spend a little bit of time cultivating the community around you, because what often happens is you'll flip people. You'll flip a handful of people's voter registration. Even if they're not office holders, they're in your administration. People will, maybe they're not quite ready to change their voter registration. They're worried about not getting reelected, but they'll start voting with you and you can really make an impact in your community. So I think that's another great reason to run, right? You can influence people around you because you become a leader. So just when you get that though, I'm like, ooh, hold on to it, you know, get it growing, make sure that you have sort of someone to come in and replace you before you give it up to chase after a larger goal.
Right. And it's that name recognition, right? You kind of like, that's one of the reasons why the LP ran some of the people that they ran was for name recognition. And if you can create that yourself at your local level, that really transfers once you create that name recognition, once you go higher, because people in that state will vouch for you, be like, yeah, he actually helped us out a lot, or she helped us out a lot. And created what we have here. And that's why we should, they want, we want them to go up higher so they can do more good for more people, kind of thing. And I don't know. One of my questions is, before we end it, is we're two 26, 27 year old dudes and we're getting involved in this. I think a lot of our listeners about the same age, too. What's the best place for us to go inside these parties? Where would you employ that type of person in the LP state parties?
I would say to focus on your local county affiliates. It's much easier to quote unquote take over your county party. And I think that it's okay to call it a takeover. I generally think of it as, it looks like you're struggling with something and you haven't been able to get much done. Let me take that over for you. Let me help you out. So go in for a takeover, but keep it framed that way. You should do what you're excited about and what you want to do. If you are a really good graphic designer, if you have social media skills, don't have someone pigeonhole you into doing something else. Do what you're good at and what you want to do, or else you will burn out really quickly. Do not pay attention to or bother with people who are trying to drag you down. Give them 0% of your attention and only focus your attention on other like-minded people. When you do that, everyone who is sort of in the middle will see what you're doing and become curious and want to do the same thing. So you just want to have a targeted focus on what you're passionate about and other people who are also passionate. And that is how your county affiliate will grow. And just the spirit of liberty will just catch fire. And before you know it, other counties in the state are going to want to be looking at what you're doing and copying it and trying to emulate it. And then you're going to feel great about what you're doing and the world will be a better place. So that's my advice.
I love it. I love it. Piper, you got anything else before we sign off out of here?
I'll just say, Angela, I appreciate you coming on. I'm really excited for your run for the LP chair. I think you're a great candidate for the spot. And again, thanks for coming on. That's all I got.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Can you give out your website and some of the other places? I know you have some funding for your trips and travel, place for that, and any other plugs you want to give out.
Yeah. If you'd like to check out my website and see a list of conventions at, which I'll be updating today, you can go check out angelamcardle.com. I've got a link to my Patreon account there, and there's a link to PayPal if you'd like to help me with my travel fund. So far, I'm going to 7 conventions this year, and I'd love to go to a handful more if it's possible. And then you can also follow me on Twitter at Angela for Congress. That's the number 4. Same handle on Instagram, and you can find me very easily on Facebook too.
Perfect. All of that will be in our show notes as well, so you can find it there. Angela, I'd really like to say thank you. We appreciate you coming on and taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk with us. And it was awesome. I loved every second of it. So I hope you well in your campaign, and we'll be right there rooting alongside with you.
Great. Thanks so much, guys.
All right. Have a good one.